Back together again, you and I chatting it up on Tuesday, January 30th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We featured a discussion with Stratford GOP State Senate Leader Kevin Kelly on a Republican plan for Connecticut's energy needs and the current electric vehicle controversy. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by to talk about union membership in Connecticut.
Back to the phones momentarily at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Earlier today, a little bit before we got on the air this afternoon, at 2, state Republicans in the House and Senate, representatives of such, held a news conference today unveiling their ideas for environmental policy going forward, as we are awash in among this controversy now as to whether or not the state should go full bore and follow what California is doing and ramp down and eliminate the sale of gasoline-powered vehicles in the state, finally, at about 2035 or so. Joining us right now is State Senate Republican Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford to tell us about that. Kevin, before we get going, I'm sure you don't think the NFL is fixed, do you?
Paul, I'm a Cleveland Brown fan.
Oh, you poor. Are you really?
Yes.
Oh, my God. God bless you, Kevin.
So, you know, I don't watch much NFL football, although this year they had somewhat of a season.
Yeah.
But for the past 20-some-odd years, they really haven't been playing football in Cleveland.
Oh, my God. All right. We'll keep it there. Kevin, good to have you with us. So tell us about what you folks, at least in the Republican caucus, are pushing here amidst all this confusion and name-calling and finger-pointing and I think a needed timeout before we went ahead and did this drawdown of gasoline-powered vehicles. First, the news conference today, what was discussed?
Okay, so what we did this morning, Paul, was came out with our plan and proposal, which does not eliminate consumer choice. You can have a gas-powered vehicle. We operate on the federal EPA standard that is adopted by, I think it's 40 other states. And basically what it is a common sense, reasonable proposal that is achievable and affordable. I mean, and that's the most important aspect of this. It's achievable. And what we're going to do is make sure that Connecticut's air improves and that we have a cleaner and greener environment. But the way we're going to enable that is not only to operate on this EPA standard, mm-hmm. which does not ban the purchase or sale of gas-powered cars, but then to plus up. We are getting, and you hear this from all sides of the aisle, a record, a historic investment from Washington into our transportation system. What we need to do, and something we've been telling the majority for the past 2 years, that we need to account for that to make sure that not only is the investment in our transportation system, and that is not going to only help our economy, but also put people to work, labor is going to benefit, mm-hmm. but then prioritize green investment to make sure that we reduce bottlenecks, have more roundabouts, make sure that we invest, and that the dollars are used to have a cleaner and greener transportation system. It makes common sense. We're getting this money anyway. I'm surprised the majority didn't come along with us to prioritize that, but they haven't. And that's why their plan, or actually their ban had no plan, is that they really don't have the backup to the goal that they're setting. And that's the real distinction in the plans, is that ours is much more common sense, reasonable. It's based on our conversations with many of your listeners and families across the state of Connecticut who just told us that the EV mandate was not good for their family, both from a financial perspective, but also we don't have the infrastructure. And there's many people who rent don't have the ability to charge overnight, and we ought not be passing laws that are going to leave people behind.
And Kevin, it's interesting, and you've probably read some of the same stuff I have too. In some, not all, but in some of the coverage of this, the paragraphs only always usually read something like, well, Republicans on the Regulation Review Committee, of which Kevin, you're one of them, they were wholeheartedly against this. But two Democrats actually said no, too. And that's the kind of thing, Kevin, that makes me laugh here. Now, of course, you folks in the Republican caucus said no to this. But if the two Democrats who said no ended up saying yes, Kathy Austin and Joan Hartley, it still would have went through. So who really killed it?
Well, I think, quite frankly, Paul, it was the people of Connecticut. Because what we did was when they came out with this policy last July to bring it before regulation review, our caucus fanned out across the state of Connecticut. I know on your show it was discussed quite frequently, and people were urged to call in and register their voice with the majority. And, Paul, I think it's that simple. The people of Connecticut responded to this issue. They made their calls, and as a result, it really stymied the majority from moving forward. While that was going on, we were doing homework, and we were showing our fellow members on the Regulation Review Committee, as well as leadership on the other team, that there were a lot of issues here. You know, there were issues for rural Connecticut. There was issues for urban Connecticut. There's no charging infrastructure right now. You know, the amount of money just to bring the grid up to code is unbelievable. We don't have the capability. Just if you took just the trucks that drive on our roads and make them all electric, they will use 40% of all electricity in the state of Connecticut. So the question is, what 40% of Connecticut are going to do without their lights, their TV, their cell phones, their refrigerators? You know, who's going to just give up their electricity? Or if we're not going to do that, then who's going to go without groceries at the grocery store? This is where it's just there's no plan. There was no thought. It was just, oh, we're going to set this goal. And why? Because California told us so. And that's the real issue, is even California is dialing back on this EV mandate. And because they're doing it, Detroit is dialing back on the manufacturing electric vehicles. The marketplace is not responding. I think it's time to take a pause. But we still, here's the thing, 90% of our air pollution comes from states to our west. You know, Connecticut still, we do have an air quality issue that we need to address, and we're willing to address it. But part of this is not only to do our part here in Connecticut, but we need our federal delegation to go down to Washington, talk with their colleagues, and get Washington to do what we're willing to do here in Connecticut, and that is to make sure that the air that they're blowing to us is clean.
And Kevin, also, I mean, let's say that in the upcoming session, something is done legislatively about, you know, the no gasoline vehicle mandate, whether it's benchmarks, whether it's a revote coming up. You know, there are still more and more and more EVs on the road every week, every month, every year in this state. So, you know, Kevin, I keep saying on this show, it's not like if you want an EV, you can't buy one. Some of our great local dealerships have a lot of EVs to sell. But unless, Kevin, and you've probably seen this brought up to you, unless people, Kevin, get a concrete idea of how the grid is going to be built up, what the timetable is, what are the engineers saying at UI and at Eversource. Kevin, I think, honestly, until people see that and can wrap their arms around it, there's going to be some hesitation here.
Oh, absolutely, Paul. And for those that can afford those electric vehicles, yes, they're going to continue to buy them. The problem is, Paul, too many families in Connecticut are struggling. And this is where the majority, I believe, is out of touch with the reality of Connecticut families. One of the statistics I found during the budget debate last year was this one. And that is that 48.5% of all Connecticut income tax filers earn less than $45,000. $45,000. And they're expected to buy an electric vehicle? Not to mention this whole thing about the infrastructure and all that. And even with the infrastructure, think about this one, too. And this is why we're so concerned. Like, if they try to put things before us that are, you know, oh, let's put this out and have benchmarks, that's putting Connecticut on a road to this mandate. And we're going to continue to voice the opinion of the people who are being left behind. And it's those individuals earning less than $45,000. Look at what they're doing right now with the electric chargers that they're putting out throughout the state. They're all along 95 mm-hmm. and up 91. But the ones in Bridgeport are going over at Steel Point, which is a marina.
Yeah.
And the others are at Brewport by the amphitheater. Just the locations demonstrates how out of touch the majority is with working middle-class families who, if you want them to have the infrastructure, you got to put it in their neighborhoods. Those are not people's neighborhoods that are the poor working and middle class of Bridgeport. And this is where I think there's a big difference, is we're going to continue to hear those voices, represent those voices, and make sure they're heard. Because this is a policy as crafted by the majority, okay, to just set the goal that's going to separate our state into those who have the ability, where Connecticut is going along swimmingly and incomes are rising and assets are growing. And then there's another part of Connecticut that is struggling, living paycheck to paycheck, just making ends meet, and don't have the resources to keep up with that other part of Connecticut. And so that's where and why we took the message out from underneath the Capitol Dome, fanned out across Connecticut. And thanks to the people that listen to this show and many others like it across the state, they heard, they responded, they called the majority Democrats, and that's what really, Paul, put the brakes on this.
All right, Kevin, real quick in the few seconds we have left, if this is brought up legislatively again, which we all expect, this will now, because it's not a special session, this will be subject to public hearings, correct?
It ought to. Under normal circumstances, it runs through the committee process, but that doesn't stop the majority from ever doing what would be like an ESERT bill or to run a strike-all amendment after the public hearing process. So people are going to have to remain vigilant. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to pay attention. And certainly, Paul, we're going to continue to be vocal on this issue because I think it's that important. That, you know, we can't leave people behind. It's really that simple. And this policy is just not the right one for Connecticut as far as how do we get to cleaner and greener Connecticut. And we think there's a better way. And that's what we showed this morning.
All right, Kevin, thanks. Kevin Kelly, Republican State Senate leader out of Stratford. Kevin, good to chat with you. We'll chat down the road. Thanks.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, there you go. All right, folks. So we'll keep an eye on this. Whether or not it's brought up for benchmarks or another type of bill, and we will bring you the very latest. Ah, yes, yowza, yowza. Thank you, old Thunder Throat there, Mr. Big Voice. At 203-333-9422-333-WICC. We will get back to open phones a bit later in the show. I will replay, in case you missed it up front early in the show, I found a clip from yesterday when I warned you that the White House won't even be able to define what an open or closed border is. We have them pretty much admitting that yesterday. And I also I found a piece of audio. You know how I always go back to that Bill Clinton segment from his State of the Union? I think it was 1994, where he pretty much hammered illegals, hammered a lax border policy, and said these people have to go. Well, I kind of found the same thing from Joe Biden not even that long ago in 2007. So we'll give you a little taste of Joe Biden. How about that? Before we say goodbye. Tonight, every Tuesday at this time, we check in with Megan Portfolio. She writes the Hartford Portfolio blog for our dear and wonderful friends at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. And she's with us right now via the magic of the phone. Ms. Portfolio, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How you doing, sir?
I'm okay. I haven't gone through the whole bottle of DayQuil, but it's close, about a week. So I got a week out of the bottle, so.
Rock on.
I think, hold on, let me look. I've got like one more mouthful left. So the head cold has almost been slain. So there you go.
That's all where good. I am.
That's where I am. See, now you're a serious runner. I read, do you ever get sick? Does the running keep you from getting sick or not?
You know what? I'll be honest. I don't laugh because I say this to all my friends. I just have really good genes, so I don't get too sick,
okay.
Thankfully.
Right. Okay. No, that's it.
The running just makes me less fat.
Okay. I try that with walking. It's not quite working, but be that as it may. Your latest piece talks about union membership, Megan, which I guess, and I saw this last week, it has dropped again nationally, but not so here in Connecticut.
No, and I won't bore you with like 8 million percentages because it's kind of not a sexy topic. However, it's a super important topic. So nationally, the trend is declining in union membership, but in Connecticut, it's the complete opposite. As a matter of fact, in the public sector, we were ranked the third highest in the country in percentage of public sector workers in the union, and that actually is increased, making us the first in the nation. So that's pretty alarming. I know it sounds great, like unions protect the workers. Yes, they do. But what people need to understand is the amount of power the unions have, and with their membership ranks swelling like this, they're only going to have more power. And just for an example, one of the reasons why we even have a state income tax is because the unions refuse to make any concessions with WIKR in order to close budget gaps. So that was one of their things. Like, we're not going to talk to you unless you put in this income tax. So like, that's just one example of how much power they have. And with so many more members and in an election year, I can't even imagine what's going to come in this session, especially after I'm sure your listeners saw the three-piece thing by the CT Mirror on our fiscal guardrails. Unions are already crying. They don't like them. And coincidentally, you know, they're up for, you know, their contract has a wage reopener this year. So they're up for another raise and possibly another lump sum payment. So it's like, it's no surprise that they're crying about the fiscal guardrails because, you know, they want to get paid. But, you know, do we want to be back in 2015 when we couldn't? Remember back in the old days?
Oh, yeah.
We make our budget. And,
yeah. And
so, yeah, so it's just important.
Yeah, and you have the scenario, Megan, and you and I see in the news every day where, you know, Ned Lamont is not, I mean, listen, he is socially, you know, on social programs and on social issues, he's a liberal. There's no confounding that. But a lot of the, you know, members of his own party, and like you say, the unions in Hartford, they're no fans of his fiscal policy here. And like you say, and we're going to have somebody on tomorrow to talk about this, they're already grumbling that not only is the governor, but Sean Scanlon, the comptroller, saying, no, let's not start spending like crazy again.
Like, we wanted this went to a vote to the people, like, back when I was probably in high school. We wanted the spending cap. We want these things in place because we can't. When you let our government do whatever they want with the checkbook, it gets out of control. The reason why we're even in all of this whole situation is because previous governors and CBAC, the State Employees Union, kicked the can down the road and started underfunding pensions, which is against the law. Like, there was a law created in the 70s that said they had to fully fund the pension. I think it was like 1985, and they went against this law, and they've been underfunding it, and that's why we're in this position. But with these guardrails in place, we paid down, I think, an almost $8 billion since 2020. It sucks. Excuse my language. I mean, that money, you know, I would like to see that back in tax cuts in my paycheck, but this is what's called consequences, and the government needs to understand, and the union needs to understand, you created this. These are the consequences. And we don't want to go back in the way it was. I mean, we have some momentum. You know, the state is getting a little bit better. I mean, we're still at the bottom of most lists, but, you know, do we want to get any worse? It's insanity. I mean, right now, we owe $40,000 a person just to cover the unfunded pension. That's 40 grand. That's more than a lot of people in the state even make. It's insane that they would even think of doing this when we're still, you know, trying to get out of this hole with this with these unfunded liabilities. And sorry, it makes me really mad.
No, that's listen. It is, but Megan, and I've gotten blowback on this too. I've gotten callers who've called and said, "Hey, I'm a state employee. I go to work every day. I you know I've done give backs in the past. I work hard. So why all this right wing hate about state workers and state unions?" I'm sure you hear that up in the annals of Hartford. What's your reaction to that? Because I'm sure you've gotten blowback by stuff you've said and stuff you've written. Yeah. So what do you say to that?
Yeah. You know, all I hear from CBAC, every time they go into negotiation, these concessions we made, like what your concessions were, you didn't get a raise for a couple years. You know what? When you work for a company and your company does well, you get a raise. You're not obligated to have a raise. Like you just... They just assume that, oh, we're going to get a raise every year. We made concessions. But you also didn't have layoffs during the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
But the middle class and the poor make concessions consistently year after year after year. When is it our turn? When are they going to benefit us? And look, I mean, this is such a small group of people, but they're basically a fourth branch of government and sometimes the most powerful branch of government. But there's more of us in this state. And you know what? The middle class is sick of it. Like you're expecting another raise this year. Well, then what do you want? Do you want more spending for the colleges or do you want more raises? Do you want more spending for nonprofits or do you want lump sum payments? Like you can't have it both ways. Like we all need to work together. You all created this mess, but middle class is stuck, you know, picking up the pieces. It's time for it to stop. The guardrails have worked. They need to be in place. And any idea of even adjusting them is just not acceptable. It's irresponsible. Like, these are the consequences. I mean, we had consequences growing up. You do something bad, there's a consequence. Well, these are our consequences.
What are you going to be watching other than that, Megan, as the session gets underway in a few days here early in February? What are you keeping your eye on? What do you hear? What's the buzz at the Capitol about some of the issues, you know, that may be hot button stuff? Now, again, it is an election year. So usually all they do is name post offices and basketball courts in election years. And
I'm digging into this right now. The environmentalists have decided that they are going to put in an omnibus bill, which is about, you know, 11, 12 different things, non-budget related, you know, in a short session where it's supposed to be, you know, kind of focusing on the budget.
Yeah.
So a whole bunch of like carbon tax, like supporting carbon taxes at the federal level. It's just a whole bunch of stuff. Keep your eyes out for it. I haven't decided if I'm publishing it on Friday or next week.
So
I'm still digging into it.
Is somebody going to try and bring back TCI, that transportation climate thing that would have hiked the gasoline tax? Is that coming back under a different guise or what's coming back?
It's hard to tell because I only have just limited information that I was able to get off of social media. I don't think so, but I know at the federal level, they do want to put in a carbon tax. And one of the bullet points in this provisions in this omnibus environmental bill is to support this Save America Act that Blumenthal is part of, which would do a federal carbon tax. And the environmentalists just want us to like recognize it and acknowledge it. So I don't know if it's going to come back. I mean, you never know with the progressives. They always are throwing in crazy stuff, and you see it, and you kind of like roll your eyes, but you kind of watch it, and it never goes anywhere. I don't think they're going to go that far. I think they're really going to have their hands full with this gas car ban.
Interesting. And the other thing I'm interested to see if we go along, and you and I talked about this, I know you did a piece on this, I believe, this getting rid of the sub minimum wage, you know, for the people at Chicago, from Chicago that came in. And again, I mentioned this might happen to a couple of servers at my favorite weekend hangout, and their jaws hit the floor, and they got like cartoon eyes on me. And they were like,
you know,
"Why? No!" They're like, "No, I like it the way it is. Don't touch it." I said, "Well, there you go."
Well, who wants a pay cut? But I mean, if you've ever followed them, and I actually, it's like the WWE of the General Assembly, the
Labor Committee.
It is. It's actually. I hate to say it. It's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah.
It makes me kind of a dork. But
you have to write a column. No, you have to write a column on that and then take all the members of the committee and like connect them to wrestlers. People will love that. Do that. Yeah.
Oh, the wrestlers may not like that. What did they ever do to hurt anyone?
Yeah. Yeah, but
yeah, so the short answer is yeah, expect to see that. And it goes back to my previous point with the union membership growing and how much power they have. And you know, they give money to these campaigns. And it's not just money. It's the manpower that they give and the endorsements. So, I mean, just expect to see whatever craziness they want. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to make like the Uber and Lyft drivers full-time employees, which would they've been trying to get that through every mm-hmm. year. And that's just another thing that the unions want, because then once they're full-time employees, they can just come swooping in. Look what I did yeah. for you. Now you can be a union member now. So anything that's going to grow the union membership, expect to see it this session.
All right. Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio. Check it out at the Yankee Institute. Megan, good to chat with you. Have a happy week, and hopefully next week we're together again, okay?
All right. Great. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, there you go.